This is the Coconetics Podcast. Episode 40, recorded Sunday, August 12th, 2012. Happy App.net Day! App.net reaches their funding goal, Apple releases Xcode 4.4 and almost kills ARM v6 support, and a crowdsourced system estimates review times more accurately. Sorry, it's been a little time since I did my last recording. The reason for this is rather pragmatic. I'm on weekends especially working as a technical editor on a book where some... I can't name the name, but this author who's got a name in the iOS development community has asked me to review a book that he or she is writing at the moment. I only find time on the weekends to go over chapters, and that cost me this weekend and last weekend. But I figured I've got some tidbits to talk about. So let's just record a quick show so that you know where I'm standing. On July 10th, Apple released Xcode 4.4. That was during my vacation. And they also started to accept submissions for iOS apps made with the Gold Master, specifically encouraging developers to use the new Mountain Lion features for when they were submitting Mountain Lion apps, especially highlighting the new cross-platform Game Center groups, so they'll be available when OS X Mountain Lion ships. Having a shiny new version of Xcode also raised the question whether we could also submit iOS apps with that. That was soon made clear. Initially, there were some people being rejected for using Xcode 4.4, but that was quickly remedied. And in the meantime, Xcode 4.4 even got a very small update, 4.4.1. though nobody really knows what this does. Must have been a very small fix. There was one thing that I reported. The Gold Master, which was developer preview 7 of Xcode 4.4, had a bug when generating code for ARM v6. ARM v6 has been in the original iPhone and the iPhone 3G. Everything after that can run ARM v7, but there's a special situation with Xcode 4.4 because Xcode 4.3 doesn't run on Mountain Lion anymore. So if everybody who is switching their development machines to Mountain Lion has to update to Xcode 4.4 because Xcode 4.3 doesn't run there, then they would have lost the ability to create, say, one final build that still supports the iPhone 3G and ARM v6, and that would have been a bad thing. But Apple saw the light and they fixed that between the Gold Master and the released version, and so Xcode 4.4.1 is actually the second update already after the Gold Master. So the first update, which was the release version, fixed this ARM v6 problem, so you now can build ARM v6 apps. Actually, the problem specifically was if you had apps that were using Arc, because when building for Arc, Xcode will include a static library as opposed to referencing dynamic libraries for every other system framework, but for earlier iOS version support, they link in a static library called libarclite, and this was missing the ARM v6 part. Yeah, like static libraries have to be so-called fat static libraries, combining code for multiple CPUs, and then the linker can pick out the correct one. And somebody at Apple was kind of overzealous and had already removed the ARMv6 portion. So you couldn't, you would get a linker warning that ARMv6 was missing from this library. But as I said, only for apps that were using Arc in some form or fashion. Now that was fixed, and now you can build iOS apps that target the iPhone 3G with iOS 4, and that's about it. But a word of warning there, it's already public knowledge that Xcode 4.5 will no longer support ARMv6. That means the original iPhone and iPhone 3G can no longer be built for. And also it cannot build anything less than 4.3. So since the iPhone 3G, the latest version was 4.2.1, I think, that's another reason why you can't build for that anymore. So you will maybe want to keep Xcode 4.4 around if you plan to support those really old devices for quite some time in the future. I don't think you really have to, not even from an economic standpoint, because even in the best case scenario, the iPhone 3G cannot be more than 10% of all iPhones ever sold, but in reality it's more likely than that there'll be like between 1% and 5% of iPhone 3G still in use, because most people had retired their iPhone 3Gs 2 years ago or 3 years ago when it was stopped being sold. So that the last time you were actually able to get an iPhone 3G with a contract was over two years ago, when it was the lower end iPhone to get. But most people would have gotten the higher end, which was the iPhone 3GS 2 years ago. 1 year ago, the iPhone 4. Last year, I think I'm off by one year. But the point that I want to make is iPhone 3G had its time, but it can safely be retired now, and so should you no longer fuss with supporting that. According to Apple, the only difference between Xcode 4.4 and Xcode 4.5 is that the latter includes the iOS 6 beta SDK, though there are also some important differences that I was able to see. There is no iOS 3 or iOS 4 debugging support that you can download and use. Well, that might change, as I said, but well, I wouldn't bet on it. So looks like the only thing at the moment that you can debug with Xcode 4.5 will be iOS 5 and iOS 6 apps. So you will have to retire iOS 4 support at that time, probably. Building for ARMv6 no longer supported with Xcode 4.5. I already mentioned that. And the minimum OS version you can target with it is iOS 4.3. Yeah, that's that. There was some problems with in-app purchases. Somebody found a way how to spoof the Apple server, and basically for each in-app purchase request to just respond, yeah, that's already was already purchased, and then people would basically get the in-app purchases for free. However, in order to get into this position of spoofing the server, that was a bit of an involved thing, and Apple reacted rather quickly to these problems. They published a document that shows how to validate digital signatures of transactions using some private API, where they make an exception to use that for the specific purpose of validating in a purchase digital signatures. So usually you couldn't use that, but if it's for validating in-app purchases, they allow you to check the signatures because these signatures have to come from Apple, and if they are not valid, then you know that there was somebody in between that spoofed something. At the same time, one day before my birthday on the 24th of July, Mountain Lion was released, and several other updates were released in rapid succession to that. The one thing that I noticed was during the time before the release, there was no Java available. And once Mountain Lion was public, Java 2012.004 became available as an automatic update. You know, if you run a Java app for the first time, it asks you, you need Java to run that, should it download it? And then it started working. And you might ask me why I need Java. Well, I need it for the Charles debugging proxy. So if I look at the web traffic of some apps for testing and debugging purposes mostly, then I need Charles running. And fortunately, with Apple delivering this Java update, I now can, and it works perfectly. Another thing that appeared was the SMC 1.5 update, which activated PowerNap on my new 13-inch Air and also on the 2-year-old 11-inch Air of my wife. What this does is basically you can choose for connected to a power adapter and not connected to have sort of a deep sleep mode where it can still do certain things. Actually, let me check in the system preferences in NHS Saver. It says, while sleeping, your Mac can periodically check for new email, calendar, and other iCloud updates. And I think what this also allows is for the Mac to be locatable via iCloud, find my Mac, find my iPhone, would show that. I had the setting disabled for not connected to a power adapter, and so when I tried it out while walking the dog a few minutes ago, it couldn't locate it. But I think if I enable this and still shut it down, even though it looks like it's totally shut down, I would still be able to locate it. Something like that. I have to test that. Yeah, and well, the third and final thing, for several years now, we have been waiting for the iWork apps to be updated with iCloud support, because we knew once Apple did that, they would be fairly confident in the abilities of iCloud, because well, it's their flagship software, and if iCloud works in there, then surely it must work for all the other developers, shouldn't it? Well, we'll see. So far, I've not seen any issues, but on the other hand, many developers tell me that there's many problems where something could get stuck or so. So we don't know whether iCloud is fully baked or not. I mentioned it already in the intro, about slightly less than 1 hour ago, app.net had reached their funding goal. Now let me quickly summarize what it is and why I backed it. You can think of app.net as an alternative to Twitter. So they try to create a for-pay service that opposed to Twitter doesn't have to rely on ads and doesn't have to make up all the money that venture capitalists put in their company by means of basically putting the customers last, but actually, well, customers in the sense of users, but actually their customers are the advertisers, because those are the people who sent them all the money. And actually promoting tweets is a fairly expensive thing. Very, very rich companies can afford that in the United States, and that's why you kept seeing sponsored tweets and trends in the United States. Thankfully, in Europe, we haven't seen these so far. But, well, there's a certain danger that this would start as well. And for the people who are using Twitter professionally, we just don't want to get bothered with ads. And the last straw, more or less, for many people was that Twitter announced that they will roll out a feature they call cards, which basically means that tweets that link to certain websites would display a snippet of these websites in line of the tweet. So suddenly a tweet would be as high as your iPhone screen. So totally defeating the purpose of Twitter, where you would have short texts and you would be able to skim over these rapidly. So some time ago, a guy named, what was his name again? Let me see if I can quickly find his name. Actually, silly me, I should have prepared better. Well, nevertheless, app.net, I think, was doing something quite different from this Twitter thing. They were doing some sort of marketing tools, I think. So the change to be an alternative to Twitter is more or less a pivot for them. And what they did is they kind of talked to Kickstarter, but unfortunately, they fall outside of the rules, so they had to do their own Kickstarter. So they basically collected people who were willing to pay the membership fee for a year in advance. And they had three levels, $50 for normal people, where you could claim your existing Twitter name to be the same name on app.net. There was a $100 level where you would also get access to developer things, like create an API key so that you could use the API and so on, and a $1,000 level for people who just have too much money. And for the longest time, it looked like they weren't going to make it, because it kind of seemed that all the cool boys were waiting until the very, very last day, really, last 2 days, Saturday, Sunday, before the end of the goal. And then suddenly there was like an avalanche. All the famous people started backing it. People like John Siracusa, who at the beginning were kind of skeptic. And quite a few people started also contributing once they saw that there was not a chance that this wasn't actually working out. So let's just quickly have a look where we are now. It's now 1 hour roughly since they passed the $500,000 limit, and they are now at $522,000. So there are 39 hours left, and if we do a quick calculation, where is my calculator? It's $22,000 per hour times 37 hours left. That means potentially they could be raising another $814,000. So, well, there'll be some sleeping times and so on, but it might just happen that these guys will blow way past their goal by Monday midnight, their time, and reach around $1 million. Now, many people are backing app.net to more or less show the middle finger to Twitter. It kind of depends on how many people will sign up there. I don't foresee that famous people who have lots of followers will totally move to app.net from Twitter if they have built up a following on Twitter. That's actually a commercial value if you have people following you. I know from my limited experience with my slightly more than 5,000 people that if I link to a article, I can get like 100 people to click through. Now, if there's somebody like John Gruber, he can direct quite a bit of traffic. So certainly the stars won't think about turning their backs on Twitter. But what probably can happen is either there will be some way to cross post between Twitter and app.net, because my handle Coconetics, I've got the same on app.net as well as on Twitter, so I could post exactly the same text on both and then get the best of both worlds. Something like this. The other thing, it's kind of a bit creepy what's going on with Twitter and third-party app developers. They are not really happy about this. So in the least, what's happening here is that there's a message being sent to Twitter. Yeah, if a startup or a pivot can raise $1 million, from say about, what would that be, 12,000 to 15,000 backers, that's a very small number of users actually, but it's quite a bit of money, and money talks, you know. If Twitter sees that people don't want ads and people would rather have that Twitter has a sort of membership scheme as well, then maybe they will change their ways. Might be. Yeah. One thing that Twitter definitely has as an advantage over app.net is their integration in iOS. But if app.net can pull it off and grow enormous following of paying users, and in this case the users are the customers and not the advertisers, then I think there is a good chance of Apple also adding app.net as a service to post to from iOS and Mac in future updates to their share panel that was just introduced in Mountain Lion and will probably come in iOS 6. So if something is mainstream enough, certainly Apple will include this in the system. And in the meantime, there will probably be clients that are able to either cross-post or maybe some web services that would synchronize the tweets. We'll all see. It's kind of really exciting. The other thing that excites me personally about app.net is I'm one of the first 7,000 people on this service. So there's not a situation like one of us joins Twitter and then there's people who have got millions of followers and most people will never get above 100 or 200, a few hundred followers. And the time is more or less over where you can be in on the ground floor. And with app.net, you can still achieve that. Now, one of the worries that I heard about in the talk show, the latest episode where John Gruber talks with John Siracusa about app.net, is that app.net might turn into a silo of geeks. So the question is, and hopefully we'll soon see something there, that there might be some free tiers that people who are not willing or able to pay any amount might still be allowed on it. Or it would turn into some sort of elite geeky silo. But even if it does that, it's still quite a valuable thing to be able to say, yes, we have 100,000 users, and all these 100,000 users are paying X amount of dollars every month or every year or whatever. I think that should actually be the future, because the one big message that I've not mentioned so far that I'm hoping that app.net is sending to the internet as a whole is that we hate advertising. We hate banner ads. We hate any kind of way where user private data or behaviors or anything like this is used to market products, like Google is doing it, like Twitter is doing it, like Facebook is doing it. And this is sort of the first social service that has a business plan right from the start. And I'm thinking the internet should be mature enough that services that charge money for something that you can get elsewhere for free, but people will choose rather choose to pay some membership fee than have their personal data be sold or their users be spammed with advertisements. So yeah, I back the $100 level, because I figure maybe I'll do a tutorial on how to post something on the service once that's a bit more done. And well, if I'm paying $50, $100, it doesn't really matter much. So with the $100, I'm amongst 1,699 backers. Contrast that with the $50 levels, where they're around 6,000, or the $1,000, where they're around 53 backers. So I'm in the top 1,700. And while I was speaking, the backing went from 520,000 to 525,000. So that it keeps on going strong there. Yeah, the final thing that I wanted to mention in this hopefully not too long episode, yeah, was there's an amazing new service, reviewtimes.shinydevelopment.com. Now, who's Shiny Development? Let's look that up quickly. If I'm not mistaken, that's the guys who are doing Shiny Development. Contact us, our apps. I thought I knew who that is. Isn't that Dave Werber? Well, anyway, Shiny Development is an app shop, and they created a sub site on their site, reviewtimes.shinydevelopment.com, and that works in a very intriguing way. So if you submit an app either to the iOS App Store or the Mac App Store, and make a note of the time when you submitted it, or actually you can look it up in the iTunes Connect app, and once it gets approved, at that time tweet how long it took. And they have a service that scrapes or looks for two hashtags, the hashtag iOS review time for iOS apps and Mac review time for Mac apps, and then it will aggregate these mentions and calculate an average. And so there's a big badge on this site that currently says 11 days iOS average calculated from 382 reviews over the last month, and 6 days Mac average calculated from 19 reviews over the last month. So let's actually compare that with what Apple says, if I go to available.apple.com and just a second there, iOS Dev Center and the news and announcements. That just gives you the number. iOS submissions reviewed in the last 8 business days. New apps 89%. App updates 95%. While this gives you a bit of kind of a betting average, so you have 95% chance that an update will go through in 8 business days, it doesn't tell you that much. Yeah, I'd rather know sort of a number of days that I should calculate with, and that's exactly what this review times site does. So I think that's a really awesome thing. You can also get a chart showing you the distribution of the durations. So that's something that, that really lives from the crowd sharing their times. So there's no harm. It's just a tweet that you do. Once you're happy, once you know that, that you have approved, just let a tweet roll, and everybody knows then what the average is. And the more people do that, the more accurate it will be. So that's, I think that's a very interesting way how to base a service on something like Twitter. So Twitter also has some positive sides. Yeah. Yeah. There's one final thing. I was having problems with reachability of a really weird sort. It looked like we're having these problems in iCatalog, and it looked like if the iPhone and iPad would go to standby while the app was open, then the reachability class wouldn't know that there's an internet connection. So don't know, is it a bug in reachability or in iOS? The recommended workaround for that was to stop the notifier of reachability when detecting that the app goes into background. Yeah, app will enter background, I think is the notification name, and to restart it once it comes back to the foreground. That's a thing that I found a nice tip from Pavel Dudek. I got that tip and I implemented them right away. And there's another tip, looking at my favorites here, that I would want to also mention. That is, you might see a situation where you would have to dismiss the keyboard, but you wouldn't know which text field on screen, if you have multiple, that can be difficult, is actually the current first responder. Now, if you search on Google, there are several possibilities to get the first responder, like search through the responder chain and so on. But actually, it's much easier. Sean Heber posted, he goes by the name Big Seifert on Twitter, posted a UI application, shared application, send action, selector, resign first responder to nil from nil for event nil. And apparently, putting in nil into the to, from, and the for event causes the responder chain to be going through. And the first one that actually is first responder will then resign the first responder, thus effectively dismissing the keyboard with one line of code wherever it is at the moment. That concludes my tips this week. I'm hoping to be able to do more shows now that I'm done with the book I was reviewing there. And also, you know how to get in touch if you need something. I'm Coconetics on Twitter and app.net, and I'm at coconetics.com on the web. You can also find my email there. It's oliver@coconetics.com. And I always love to get some good questions that I could research and answer to, and maybe write a blog post or say something about on my podcast. Now that's it. See you